views expressed on the following program of those of its hosts and participants in no way reflect those of the staff or management of WNRI.
The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
It's time for the John DePietro Show on News Talk, WNRI, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.
He's a special kind of sentinel.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host, John DePietro.
All right, folks, good afternoon. Welcome. The Power Hour has arrived. John DePietro, it is the John DePietro Show. Here I am. Weekdays, we start right at 11. We do not stop. We go until 2 on AM 1380, 99.9 FM, and it's WNRI. This portion of the program brought to you by K's 1013, Cass Avenue, Woonsocket. Whether it's lunch, dinner, or drink in the lounge, stop into K's. Always a friendly face. They have tremendous service, great sandwiches. Stop in and see them. It is, in fact, K's 1013 Cass Ave, right across from CBS in Woonsocket. Well, folks, it is Political Monday, and let's bring him on. He is the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. We want to say good afternoon to our friend Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon, John. Good to talk to you.
Justin, I want to start off with, it was Friday, kind of like the Friday news dump in a way, but it was Friday right around 5 o'clock, I'm going to say, is when the media got wind that Mayor Alorza vetoed the zoning change. The mayor of Providence, Jorge Alorza, newly reelected, by the way, he's about to begin in January. He'll be sworn in, serve his second four-year term. But he, in fact, he vetoed the zoning change on the Hope Point Tower, where you have this developer from New York, Jason Fain, and he has a very unusual design, and it's a $300 million product, and he's got the unions on board, and this has been very contentious with the council. The council now does have the opportunity to override the veto. It is unclear. It's very close right now if that could happen, but he put out a statement that it had to do with that they were speaking with the Fain people, and although things were being discussed verbally, they were not... the Fain people were unwilling to put certain things, according to Alorza, in writing. He put out his reasons for it. The Historical Society, I believe, of Providence Preservation Society, maybe they praised him for it. A number of people on the east side were against it, but it has certainly set off, you know, reaction from the Senate president, even the Speaker. Raimondo has stayed out of it, Governor Raimondo. And I want to remind people, she did have an Alorza sign on her lawn, but she has stayed out of this. But Alorza feels he is in the right, Mayor Alorza, and now a couple things would have to happen. Either the city council in Providence would have to step in and override that veto, or if Senate President Ruggiero and House Speaker Nick Mattiello, who are both critical of Alorza on vetoing this Hope Point Tower, the Fain developer, Fain, $300 million project, that they say they want to retake that 195 land. But that is something that I think that Alorza would fight them on and go back and forth. I want to hear your thoughts on this and the political element that this is all politics that has come into play with this whole situation.
Right. Well, the first thing that jumps out at me is the Alorza really put emphasis on the fact that the Fain developers wouldn't give the city complete veto power over the design of the building, which seems like kind of an excuse to me. I mean, that's if you want veto power on the design, you're basically leaving yourself a veto over the whole project based on kind of not much. I mean, you could all of a sudden, out of nowhere, 6 months in, after there's millions of dollars invested, say, you know what, we don't like the look of it. We're going to veto this. So I don't know that any developers would really give that over. And it seemed like a bit much to ask. There could be some specific discussion of what parameters the designers had to work in. So I'm not sure I believe that. But one thing we've talked about frequently, and it really is, we're starting to develop a pattern here where, I mean, you can disagree with any given project or multiple projects, and I do, but we're starting to look at, you know, no energy plant in Burrellville, no Fain Tower here, no baseball stadium in Pawtucket. I mean, these all have different issues like subsidies and green stuff and all that, but you're starting to really get a sense in Rhode Island that we're kind of a closed society. And if you want to do any business here or move into this closed society, you really have to buy off enough special interests to overcome that sense that we don't want anything to change or be added or taken away. And that's not a very economically sound way to go. And it looks like it almost comes down to exactly that problem on the city council, because they need 10 votes to override the veto. They had 9 to pass the zoning change in the first place with 1 abstention and 5 opponents. So now it becomes, can they buy that one more vote? And that's where we really start to see how this system works, and it's not a healthy way to go. And it also wouldn't be healthy if the legislature started saying, you know what, we don't like your local decision, so we're going to take away your zoning authority. That would be another bad direction this might go.
Yeah, there's nothing good about this in any way, and the council was close on this. It's a little convoluted, but Salvador, head of the city council, had to abstain. I don't think the new council that they're going to be in favor, because I'm pretty sure the progressives are against it. But Justin, you're right. A big part of this was the contention that Alorza felt the city should still have some say on the design, and they wanted him to kick in, like, I think it was like $50,000 a year to take care of the bridge that they wanted and the parks. I remember hearing that there was no money set aside for that. And even the Journal wrote in their editorial that it does reek of like a shakedown. But, you know, this is one of those examples, Justin. I just wonder who is the constituents that he is playing to. Is he doing things, meaning Mayor Alorza? He obviously won re-election handily, right? So he's the mayor. He's not going anywhere. This thing has been floating out there. It is interesting it happened after the election, but he won overwhelmingly in this last election. He, as much as at the State House, they can try to work the council. Well, he also can work the council, and he has the power in Providence to make the council. But I just come back to, he has had success sticking by his constituents. He, as much as Dee Dee Whitman did okay on the east side still decides, you know, who becomes the mayor, basically. You can't become the mayor of Providence unless you win the east side. But I you're right. I don't know what the real reason is, but I know that there are other developers saying that the numbers just don't work on what this, you know, the guy Fain is putting forward, because these high-end luxury apartments that he wants, from what I understand, would be double the cost of other luxury apartments in the city. So I think, you know, he's envisioning people paying $5,500 a month, I believe, was some of the numbers I saw, to live in the tower. Now, this isn't Boston. It's not New York. I don't see any jobs coming in. I'm not exactly sure who these people are going to be that be moving in there. But Alorza seems completely confident and comfortable with his position on this. He, you know, one thing I will say about him is he in no way tries to play the political game and ingratiate himself, because he hasn't, with those at the State House. He, whatever his political ambition may be, he certainly does not seem in any way to cave to the likes of Ruggiero and Mattiello, and they're going nuts about it, especially Ruggiero, because, you know, the developer Fain, he checked all the boxes with the unions, like, fine, he's going to use all of them, use all of the union costs, all the union labor, everything, which from what I've been told is astronomical on that project. But Alorza is not breaking. And if they want to say they're going to take the land away from him and the Providence won't have the input, I don't think he's going to go down without a fight.
Oh, no, and he shouldn't. And neither, no municipal authority should accept that as the outcome of this. The state's going to start taking away zoning power. But regarding the cost of the project and that sort of thing, that is the other question. I mean, we do have to wonder, somewhere in this, where is the subsidy coming from? But on the other hand, you know, it's an indication, and we've talked before about the sort of the spirit of the state and the way few people feel like things are going. And if you've got a developer dropping that much money to make that big of a mark on the city, whatever else it is, it's a vote of confidence in a direction of the city and of the state, which, whether it's misplaced or not, I don't know, but it would have that effect. It could end up like the tower in Portsmouth over here on East Bay, where the Carnegie Abbey Tower luxury apartment,
right,
again,
yes,
looks like a great spot, and now it's from what I understand, pretty much empty, because nobody ever wanted to spend the money to live in it.
No, it is basically, there's only a couple tenants in there, but you're exactly right. It is empty, basically.
Yeah, so really you could end up with that again, which would be a problem, but when you have a functioning society, you know, people take that investment risk and everybody else is able to fill in the gaps so it doesn't turn out to be a complete failure. The problem in Rhode Island is we're so constrained by what we're able to do, and we're seeing that with this project and how the economy is allowed to work and whether people will even let things change enough to have a dynamic economy where jobs and proliferate. Until we have that, you know, the project looks, it's almost like we're stuck in a log jam because you can't get the innovation without the sense that things are changing, and you can't get the sense that things are changing unless we allow things to actually change, which goes back to allowing the innovation in the first place. And I think that's where, you know, it's one of those, so often recently you just have to shake your head at the way these things go in Rhode Island. Just, you know, pull the government back a bit and let it all flow, and I think we'll get where we want to go. But the combination of insider deals, as we see with the House and Senate leadership and the unions, the insider deals versus the NIMBY, you know, not in my backyard idea, and then the sort of progressive mandates that anything that happens to go in has to somehow be shaken down for some social program or something or other, that's not a workable way to run a society in the long term.
I agree with you, but I think a big part of this, Justin, is the fact that as much as people complain, they don't want to let go of control and they don't want to change. And we can touch on both. Number one, the 195 land. Now, I have followed this since they had the meeting, and there was the developer came up from New Jersey, and he was very open and said he was surprised there were more people here. But when people saw that they were going to dictate everything, I remember Clay Pell saying when he was running for governor, we need to handpick exactly the type of companies we want there and who's going to build there. It should have been, instead of a menu of here's the land, it's for sale, and boom, you know, whatever you want to, if you want to buy it and build it, then you go right ahead. But right from the beginning, there were political insiders. You know, Diana Kelch, she was in charge of marketing for it. She had no experience with that in any way. At one point, she was being paid $8,000 a month, and then she named it The Link, after Link Chafee, like that's going to link everybody together. No one moved on it. They won't step back, even though, to me, it's like, a patient that goes to the doctor and they're having a health problem, and the doctor says, you need to quit smoking. And the patient says, I want to be healthy, but I refuse to quit smoking. I mean, look at, there is something wrong. You have that parcel of land, but only one developer wants to build there. Other developers have wanted to build there. Like I said, I know of a local developer that wanted to, and they were told you have to use all of the unions. You have to use all union labor and pay them at the rates that they want. And this developer told me it's not feasible because then they jack up the rates 25-30%. You're better off building in Boston, New York, because then you could charge more for the rents. So even though they know that having union and labor control the land, it's not a deterrent. They'd rather have it sit open. Then they feel at some point someone's going to come along and they're going to go with it. And it's the same thing with the Superman building. What more does it take that all these companies have gone through and then they say no for various reasons? And then Joe Paolino says, you know, we need to get Mayor Lorza and Gina Raimondo. We need to get community leaders involved, and we should locally buy the building, and then it needs to be restored through tax credits. Justin, I mean, when has that ever happened before? Never. Alorza and Raimondo together, they couldn't get the PawSox deal done. As much as some of the people say and claim, some of the leaders claim they want to change things and get things done, to me, it is like the guy that wants to get healthy, but he still insists on eating unhealthy food and smoking. He may say it, but actions speak louder than words. And that Superman building remains vacant with, there's no one coming in there. Let's face it. There's no one coming in there that is going to spend $100 million to renovate that building. No way. And if Paolino and did get a group, I think you'd see exactly what happened with the Apex building. That land in the Apex building in Pawtucket was valued, I think, at like $3 million. And as soon as the owner found out that that was the site that the Paw Sox wanted, what did he want? $20 million for the land. I mean, I think you'd run into the same thing. If they, that High Rock developer, who did get a lot of money from Bank of America, by the way, and he won't disclose how much he got, but he got millions in a settlement against Bank of America. Even if then they convinced Samsonite or PayPal or Citizens, okay, we found a tenant and they want to buy the building or whatever it is, people start to suddenly get that false sense of confidence. And then I think he'd say, well, I bought it for $33 million. Now I want $53 million for, or something like that. But just your thought that I think this is another example. The process, the way it is set up, is broken. There's too many people to negotiate with, because you go to the 195 thing, and I know the Fain people, so they have a deal with Ruggiero and the laborers. But then they got to deal with each other council people. And then the council people play, you know, what's in this for me? So then you got to play games with them. And then you have the mayor that says, what's in this for me? There's too many people when you're trying to do business with the handout, and there's not enough of just like one-stop shopping. I'm going to move on to something else, but I want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, we're kind of in the worst of all worlds here. There are two ways you can go. You can go with freedom, and if it's in your business model and everything works out for you to do this project, you do it. If you can get the money together, there you go. You've got a free hand to do that kind of thing. Or you've got kind of the one-stop shop dictatorship where you come in and you've got, even if you end up with a legislative leader or two and a governor, you know, three people you deal with, you're good. There's nothing going to come in. We don't do either of those in Rhode Island. We do this kind of thing where everybody's the community, the business community, the minority community, this community, the union community, and they all come together and have to negotiate among themselves in this chaotic routine where basically any one of them can pull the plug on a real deal at the end of the day. And we're not willing to kind of pick one. And I think we should go the freedom route, because the dictatorship one doesn't work in the long run anyway. I mean, as if Clay Pell knew what should go on the 195 ground land, you know, some years ago. That's really where we are. We're just, it's like I said before, in this log jam. And I think your smoking analogy is good. It's almost like everybody likes the way everybody's getting a cut. So nobody wants to change the core problem, which is the smoking. So they're all, well, what if I eat a little better? Well, that'll help, but you're still going to die. You know, what if I exercise some more? No, you know, it's kind of not going to help you with emphysema. That's where we are. And that's what really, really needs to change. And the scary thing is you don't see any evidence of that kind of across the board in the political leadership or even in the test scores we just saw. There's no appetite for change. And it's really a problem. Makes you think we may be well into the death spiral that people have been warning about for some decades.
Yeah, I agree with you. Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It's Political Monday. Speak with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. Justin, that's a very good sequel into the test scores. The test scores are just absolutely atrocious. I thought the Journal editorial was very strong yesterday. I think, though, there's so many different political factions to this. Number one, notice also they didn't even get the 10th grade. They didn't even include 10th grade. I don't think they want 10th grade, because 10th grade paints even a bleaker picture, if you will. The 3rd grade, 8th grade test scores are bad enough compared to Mass. But there's so many different political elements to this, starting with there's no accountability or responsibility. And I've been talking about this. Governor Cacciari in 2009 brought in Deborah Gist. And Deborah Gist was the education commissioner, and she was motivated and a reformer, and she was going to move ahead and try to improve the test scores. And she put in a system that over a period of time you had to show proficiency, and at the 9th hour, just as things really would have kicked in, I know Ken Wagner, who's to me a puppet to Raimondo, said we had our moment of truth or whatever it was, truthful moment or whatever, painful truth or whatever it was. The real painful truth was the year that, several kids were not going to graduate because they did not show proficiency. And that was right the time. That was the moment. It's like in a game where you have a window of opportunity to actually, you need to score, you get a fumble, whatever it is. But that was it. That was a time to hold the course, hold strong, work with those students, and set the example that going forward, you needed to show proficiency because there was going to be a standard. But at the ninth hour, because of union pressure in the General Assembly stepped in, they cut the legs out from the commissioner and said, we're not going to include it. You don't have to show proficiency. There's no standard to get a high school diploma. Let those kids graduate. They scrapped the test. Raimondo came in, got rid of Deborah Gist, and now we are where we are. They don't have the political courage. The unions still run the show. The unions have the power. We've seen outrageous demands in Providence this year, Warwick last year. The unions still call the shots. They control the General Assembly. And right now, as we speak, there are no standards en masse. No one wants to touch on. You have to take the test and pass the test to get your diploma. In Rhode Island, there's no such standard. The method is, and the feeling is, push the kids out. Get them out. I'm tired of educating them anyway. If you have money, send your kid to private school. If you don't, too bad. You're stuck in the system. You know, that report came out. There was no emergency press conference from Governor Raimondo. Governor Raimondo wanted nothing to do with those test scores. You don't have her anywhere on record talking about them. Wagner was put out forward. And as you and I both know, the test scores were delayed until after the election. So Governor Raimondo did not have to stand on a stage and be questioned about them.
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. I mean, you gave a great summation of the history here. And you could trace it even in other test scores like the National Report Card, the NAEP. Basically, as you said, you had Carcieri with, and don't forget, Bob Flanders and Angus Davis on the statewide school board pushing for reform. And you saw these test scores improving because of these standards. And
that's
for
right.
me, the real moment of truth was the election of Link Chafee. That's where Deborah Gist lost her
that's
grip,
right. Yes.
Started to slip. And the test scores, what do you know? They stopped going up and started going down. And that's the story of Rhode Island, is that we've let the school, the whole education system, the focus of it is the paychecks of the employees who work in it, not the students. And you can really tell that with Ken Wagner in all of the interviews with him and all the statements he put out. He blamed everybody. It's superintendents, it's taxpayers, it's city councils trying to involve themselves too much in education. It's this, it's that. It's even the culture of Rhode Islanders themselves who accept too little for their families. All of this is a problem. He did not once mention the teachers' unions, which are the single biggest impediment to any kind of reform in the state. And that's why the headline on my post in The Current was that he is going to fail the children of Rhode Island, because we're going to go through another 10 years of this. I call it fix the system reform, where you just try to, you know, maybe we cannot change too much, but with some, this is what Massachusetts did to some good effect. I mean, they are number one in the country, but where you just try to fix little things and you don't really, nothing radical like, say, school choice. But if with some accountability and a little bit of testing, and there you go. And that's fine, and it got Massachusetts where it is, but it has a political ceiling, and they're starting to see that in Massachusetts as well. They've kind of stalled out and have drifted a little bit while other states are catching up. That can't be tolerated anymore. Every little tweak we do takes 10 years to prove out. And then when they do that, they switch the test and say, oh, well, this isn't comparable anymore. It's a whole new set of standards, so we need another 10 years. And meanwhile, generation after generation of our students are being pushed through this system that is failing them. I mean, when you've got, in some districts, you know, middle class districts with 25% proficiency in math in eighth grade, that's just not tolerable. And the idea that not only is the governor not saying anything, but you don't have parents raiding their school committees and knocking on the door at the General Assembly. You know, it makes me think of with the Kavanaugh hearings in Washington. You had the radicals actually pounding on the door of the Supreme Court because he had been nominated. Where are the parents banging on a door at the state house or at the town hall or city hall? That's where it ought to be going. But instead, you know, we all, in that respect, I guess Wagner's kind of right. People just accept this. And as you say, we just, people who can afford it say, you know what, private schools. Because if the reality is, if you look at SAT scores, even the even the lower end, not lower end, even the more standard, you don't have to go to a hoity-toity private school. You can go to a parochial school, and you still get a comparable education to the same kind of private school in Massachusetts, which is better than any public school in either state. And that's why Rhode Island actually has a high percentage of private school parents, because when you can afford it, that's what you do. You insulate yourself a little bit in Barrington and East Greenwich, but as these scores show, even then you're only buying a middle-of-the-pack education by Massachusetts standards even.
Yeah.
So that's where we are, and it's people who can get out of the system have done it and continue to do it, so there may not be a whole lot of willingness to change, because you have to at some point. Somebody's got to stand up to the teachers' unions, and that's not in the political cards right now.
It is not in any way. You're exactly right. And to me, this is another example of, you know what the problem is. Anyone that wants to look at it reasonable knows what the problem is. But it is the pushback they will get. And let's face it, Raimondo, she has no desire to battle the teachers' unions. None. Zero. She learned that after the whole thing with the pension. She will never do that again. She wants to shake that off. She has no interest in her final 4 years, if she stays that long as governor, of battling Frank Flynn and Bob Walsh. And Justin, you know what's funny is you and I both can tell when there's talking points. And the talking points that are coming out are, well, in Massachusetts, they teach to the test. Or you got to throw more money at the problem. As if, oh, it's time to, we're not funding it properly. I'm already seeing some of the progressives and union people, oh, we're not funding it properly. I think Rhode Island was the fifth highest funding per student and ratio in the country as far. So that certainly is not the problem. And this business of mass teachers to the test, well, it's working. It's obviously working because the kids are getting higher scores, they're getting higher SATs, and they're getting into better colleges. So this business of they teach the test, well, then who's the Rhode Island teachers teaching to? They're obviously not teaching to the test. So how are they teaching to? But to me, you're exactly right. It comes down to that, and I've said this before, the Journal, in their op-ed piece, they mentioned Bob Flynn, National NEA Rhode Island, National Education Association of Rhode Island, very, very powerful. They also mentioned that Frank Flynn, American Federation of Teachers, the two teachers unions that control everything, that have all the power, that have the powerful lobbyists. And it's even the perception, as I've said, on a lively experiment, once a year, Jim Hummel, my friend, says, this week, we're going to break off and have an education panel. Joining us is Ken Wagner, the Commissioner of Education. Also, Dave Dooley, President of URI. Also with us is the woman that's the Megan something, who's the President of CCRI. And then also on the panel, Bob Walsh of Rhode Island. He's not an educator. He's a union organizer, union person. But he is treated in the respect as if he is, in fact, an educator. Until that is changed, that mindset, and this is the media, and Hummel's been around a long time, they're not educators. Him and Flynn, they're not educators. Marsha Reback used to be head of the Providence Teacher Union. She's not an educator. That Maureen Martin is with AFT. She's not an educator. This woman in South Kingstown we're going to touch on, they're union organizers. All it is about paychecks, perks, and getting as much as they can for their members. It has nothing to do with performance. It has nothing to do with the students doing better. No teacher is compensated if they do a better job. And Justin, as far as Governor Raimondo, it was very clear. She has been silent. Her priority this past fall was to get that bond passed so the laborers could build us new schools. So guess what, Justin Katz? These kids, now they're going to be failing in brand new, expensive, beautiful new schools, of which, as we've talked about, who knows where that, actually, I had Mike Stenhouse on, who knows where that's going? That could end up being outdated, these huge, old school buildings and everything else, between mutual or virtual or learning and everything else online, that could be a relic from the past, but it doesn't matter. Raimondo is checked out. She's not engaging with this. Her focus is the whole free tuition with CCRI, because that plays across the country. To me, before we move on, I'll give you the final word. She seems no interest. You know what? The silence is deafening. She has said zero since these test results have been come out.
Oh, yeah. Well, what can be said? I mean, they say they teach to the test. Well, you know, these tests aren't designed. It's not like you're quizzing them on specific historical facts, like who did what in what year. These are supposed to be concept tests. where you know the math that you're supposed to know at the grade, or you don't. And to, for us to have schools with, I think some of the urban districts are as low as 6% proficiency in math. Are you telling me that this, the curriculum on these tests is so specific that 94% of the students don't know the haven't encountered the concepts because it's this weird new curriculum out of Massachusetts? That's absurd. And the idea that it's even the teaching to the test, it's, which test? The students did terribly on the kneecaps. They did terribly on the parks. They do they don't do as well on the NAEP test, which Massachusetts at the top, and on eighth grade math, I think on the NAEP, Rhode Island is bottom 10. Everything reinforces itself that we're doing something wrong. And I have to say, I think you're a little optimistic on the beautiful new schools thing, because that's assuming everything is done well and wisely. I know at least here in Tiverton, we just...
Well, that's true.
We just took out a bunch of millions of dollars in bonds to fix stuff at the high school and the middle school, and it was handled so poorly that the schools are in some ways worse off. The leaky roofs, you've got mold issues, water stairways closed down because they've got floods going down the stairs when it rains. I mean, so that's a debacle we're probably going to watch for the next 10 years, as more kids not only are being taught poorly, but they're being taught in disrupted environments because we refuse to do things in a rational way. We're going to go get $250 million all at once to just fix everything because it looks good for the governor's campaign. That we're in trouble, and the kids are definitely suffering. And then this is why, you know, people move out and why we're going to lose a congressman in the next census.
Yeah. Now, Justin, also, and again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It's Political Monday. We're speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. Justin, staying on that, it was very unusual. In South Kingstown, they elected a member of the union organizer. She's very well paid. She makes $160,000 a year. They elected her to the school committee, and the law firm that gave her the legal opinion that she would need to seek an ethics opinion every time she wanted to weigh in on something, well, they didn't like that, so they terminated the law firm on Friday. And as much as people are saying they do need to do the right thing and have her resign, she's not going anywhere. The school committee now is basically being influenced and in some ways run by a member of the union. It is the definition of conflict of interest. But I don't, number one, she has no intentions of resigning. She won the election. They got rid of the law firm. And now, I mean, that is the direction that things are going. Instead of relying on politicians, I think you're going to see more union members running for office to control the school committees.
Yeah, what strikes me about this, I mean, it's nothing at all new for union members, or especially retirees. They often retire pretty young in these government jobs. They go out for the school committee and or the General Assembly, for that matter, and pay their political dues in that regard. So that's nothing new. You know, you're taught in one community, and then you're on the school committee in the next town over or something like that. That's nothing new. But this is now, as they're admitting, probably the first time an actual union rep has taken a seat on a school committee. And that trend, especially if it continues, makes you wonder if even the unions are starting to think, you know what, things are getting so bad around here, people are going to be clamoring for change. Let me need to get out ahead of this and put our own people on the school committees. It can't even just be, you know, former teachers who are sympathetic to our cause. It has to be one of our reps sitting there as vice president of a school committee. And that if that's where this is going, I think we'll see more students pulling out of the public schools and more problems with the schools. And South Kingstown's going to be an interesting test on that. I mean, they voted for her. They put her in there. They collectively, as a voting group, they must want her, you know, putting aside chances of, you know, mail ballot fraud and all that kind of stuff. We'll see where their education goes in South Kingstown. It's not bad by Rhode Island standards. And the taxes and test scores may reflect the change in attitude in the coming years.
And finally, over the weekend on Saturday, Governor Raimondo, to me, this was the real election she was looking for. This is why it was imperative for her to be reelected. She was elected. She will be the chairwoman for the National Democrat Governors Association over the next 2 years. This is really going to open doors for her. I think the vice chair is New Jersey. This will allow the governor to network herself, make incredible connections, expand her networking base, really do solid with this. this was so imperative to me. This was the real election that everything was gearing towards. But no, but it was. It's kind of like in succession. November 6th needed to happen for this to happen. And now Governor Raimondo, as much as people think she traveled a lot and her focus was just on raising money, I think this is just the beginning of. She is going to me, my opinion, going to be absolutely checked out. It's all going to be about networking, raising money, really raising her profile within the party.
Oh, well, yeah. And she's pretty much outright said it's mostly about fundraising and flying around and talking to people and networking. So we get our governor out and about across the country even more than was the case in her first term. In that regard, she keeps saying the governor's association, it's important because you have to be able to deliver for your constituents, which is, not even arguably, that's her weak spot as a governor, is delivering for her constituents and doing things competently and well. So, yeah, it's more time of the governor getting national spotlight. What's interesting, though, about some of the coverage of this is she is now emphatically denied that she wants anything to do with the Senate or Congress, or even in one interview, she said she doesn't even want to go to Washington, which comes back to what you just said, is, well, what does she need this giant network for? That's a valuable thing she's acquiring now, this network of progressive and Democrat donors that doesn't necessarily mean she's going to be running for a political office. She may want some kind of, you know, a behind the scenes role, or maybe just she wants those connections for some other purpose. But that's going to change, I think, the topic of change the way we discuss her future. The fact that she's now disclaimed 100%, she said, that she wants to go to the U.S. Senate or Congress. Politicians can go back on that stuff pretty quickly, but it does raise the questions. What is she actually doing? Where does she see her future? And it isn't going to be in Rhode Island governance. So what is she going to be doing, and what voters ought to be watching for? No, at this point it's too late to vote her out, but what taxpayers ought to be watching for in Rhode Island is what is it she's actually going to be doing for us over the next 4 years?
She's not.
While she's doing this.
Yeah, she's not. And then we'll end on this, but just think of this. The past 4 years, she was focused on trying to improve education, trying to get cranes in the sky, and trying to make Rhode Island government more efficient. And over the final parts of her term, and we've seen where that's gone out. Education is nowhere. There are no cranes in the sky. They're building some hotels and a couple of things there. But, and certainly no companies have come in. The next 4 years, it's about, you don't want controversy. We saw the problems with UHIP. We're seeing the PawSox leave. We're seeing Benny's and different things close shop. She got her tolls on the road. But the next 4 years, you know, you can only focus on so many things. It's about, you don't want controversy. You don't want any contentious back and forth. It is about building new bridges, raising money, making contacts, raising profile. As far as the Senate comment, that is just, you'd also don't need a controversy or a distraction. If she in any way said, yes, someday I'd love to be in Washington, then they rush to Senator Reid or Senator Whitehouse and say, you know, what's your reaction to that? So, listen, you know, we're seeing it in Texas. Beto O'Rourke lost, and what do you say? I have no interest in 2020. Suddenly, it's like, you know, I'm not opposed. I mean, no one ever calls them on it. Let me put it this way. There's no penalty to change your mind. There's no penalty to say, I'm not going to run. And then if you do, in fact, run. Because then you just say the circumstances have changed. So I think she doesn't need distractions. She doesn't need anything. Does someone float out? She's looking to challenge Senator Reid for that Senate seat in 2020, which I don't think she has any interest in. She wants to build her own brand. She totally wants to go to Washington. And let's see what happens over the next year. But her profile is definitely going to be out there. And her people do tell reporters to include her in talks of running for president. There's always a difference with that, but her people definitely phone, her press people tell reporters, if you're doing an article on potential Democrats who could seek the high office, make sure you mention Governor Raimondo. Folks, he's the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. He's Justin Katz. Justin, excellent as always, and we'll talk to you again.
Had lots of fun. Talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you. Folks, Justin Katz, again, right here on the John DePietro Show. 766-1380. 766-1380. You can email me, john@depietro.com. john@depietro.com. And, folks, I don't mean, you know, obviously, we're not trying to bum people out. But if you're one of those people and you're listening, you're saying, you know what? I would like to at least explore Florida. I'd love to explore Florida. I know a guy. His name's Dominic Pellini. He's the owner of Vanderbilt Realty. He is the king of Naples, Florida. We spoke to him just on Friday. And right now, listen, he could help you. Maybe you're thinking, why not Naples, Bonita Springs, Estero, Fort Myers is a beautiful section. That's on the West Coast. He can help you anywhere in Florida. But he's a Rhode Islander who would like to help answer some questions if you have interests. Like, hey, I've thought about Florida. Think about Florida. No state income tax, no car tax, low gasoline prices, low real estate taxes. In January, the average temperature, the weather is great. The roads are great. It's more affordable. The school systems, by the way, are tremendous. Why not now? Why not you? Florida. Well, you can call, and I'm going to give you his phone number and web address. Dominic Pellini, my friend. You can call or text him at 239-949-2117. 239-949-2117. Dominic Pellini, why not you? Why not at least find out, have a conversation with him about living in Florida? His real estate, his website is VanderbiltRealtyFlorida.com, VanderbiltRealtyFlorida.com. One more time, VanderbiltRealtyFlorida.com. Call Dominic Pellini. Kick the tires on it. Why not? Those that move to Florida, they don't say, why did I do it? They say, why didn't I do this earlier? 239-949-2117. To the phone, 766-1380. Good afternoon. You're next on the John DePietro Show. Hello.
Hello, John. How are you?
Very well. Go right ahead, Freddie.
You know, John, you know, you were talking about school committees. They loaded up our school committee down here in Warwick also. They put three members in. You know, who lived in the president's rental piece of property? They put a kid in 20 years old. They got the votes. You know, the unions down here in Warwick.
And they're going to do whatever the hell they want then.
They actually control the school committee now.
Wow, is that right? I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and, you know, they just didn't have, you know, nobody really pays attention to the school committee races. And you want to know why? They don't have the power to tax. If that would ever happen, the power to tax, then you would see the people pay attention to the school committee races. Because you're absolutely right. By the time, you know, we passed, what, $250 million for
the buildings,
know,
yes.
Fitting, yep. Right? Well, down here in Warwick, we passed $40 million more.
Look at that. And on top
so
of that, Fred,
that's a double whammy.
Here's what people don't understand, and I learned this firsthand when Laffey was the mayor of Cranston. With the school committee and the school department, if they exceed, let's just say Warwick, and I don't even know what the budget is, but if they exceed their budget by $2 or $5 million, well, the city just has to come up with it. The mayor, the way it's designed is the mayors in Cranston and Providence have no control over what the school committee does and the school budgets. So even though I remember in Cranston, Laffey didn't learn that till he became mayor. As much as every time he was trying to rein in the cost, when they would go over the spending, it was like the city had to find a way to come up with the money.
And it's like that down here in Warwick.
Yes,
also.
Of course it is.
It's like that everywhere. And you know something? It's just not in this state. It's throughout the United States. You know, it's just.
It's worse here, Fred. It's worse here. But you know what's interesting, Fred, is in 2018, now soon to be 2019, the unions are actually getting more powerful instead of less powerful, because it was your Warwick rep, that Camilla Wilkinson, she's introduced the Evergreen provision. That will be reintroduced this year. And that's what people don't understand. That means the contract never ends. The Evergreen contract provision, which Governor Raimondo did veto. But going forward, if that passes and Raimondo, she's not fighting them anymore. She's not fighting. She's checked out.
No.
She is checked out.
She was checked out the night after.
That's right. Well, after Saturday, after winning this high post. You know, Fred, you know what's interesting is anyone that's ever been around when someone announces
that they've given their two-week notice. Okay, so they give their two-week notice, and everyone says, in the first day, they're working with the boss. They want a smooth transition, everything else. But, and I even went through this years and years ago when I was going to leave one job, and I was taking it. Actually, I was leaving to go to New York. After about 1 or 2 days, that person becomes checked out. And then suddenly the lunches become longer. Maybe they come in a little bit later. Maybe they leave a little bit earlier. But they realize they're leaving. And that's what you're going to see with Raimondo. You're exactly right. She is already checked out.
It's come to the point, and I want to just throw this out there. I can see the clock. You know, you're running a little bit.
That's
late,
all right.
You know, we discussed this last week also about that mayor down there in Providence.
Yes.
Telling the developer, hey, listen, you want that building? Well, I want this. And I want that. And I want this. And
yeah,
I want that.
That's right.
Now, the developer could have said, hey, you know, I'll give you that, and I'll give you that. But you're not going to get this. You're not going to get that. You're not going to get that. He could be stamping his feet on the floor. Now, I heard, you know, the Senate president, you know, earlier today, he's put in some legislation for this never to happen again.
Right.
So everything's going to look wonderful.
Well, let's talk about that. Why does he want that building to go up, Ruggiero? Do you know the answer to that?
Well, let's see that. You've been talking right along all, you know, out of the morning and the afternoon. Union jobs. That's the only
that's
thing that can work.
And they've agreed
all
to everything.
Unions,
this guy has agreed to everything. He has. He signed off on everything. It's like a dream come true. They can't believe it.
Yeah, and you know, just leave me alone and let me put up a builder that way I want. But I'm not going to get shaken down. And
right.
It looks like he's going to stand his ground.
Yes.
And you know something? Now you've got the 10 council people saying, well, you know something? Maybe it's time now that we slap the mayor once. Because he's never been slapped.
Fred, I'll tell you what, though. I'm not a fan of Elorza, but there's something about this deal to me that just does not seem right. This guy in New York fame, I think he thinks of the locals are just that, a bunch of local yokels. We've seen what happens when a building is half done. You remember URI when Dan Doyle, they had that building going up, Rylance
right.
Through Sport, and what did it do? There's nothing worse than a... you know what's worse than an empty piece of land? Someone that owns the land and the building's half finished. So I think this guy Fain, who's agreed to all of the union concessions, anything they want, they can't believe it. It's like having a pigeon coming in. Anything he wants, anything they want, he says yes. I think he starts to put 10% of the building up or 20%, and all of a sudden, boom, the brakes go on, and he says, we need to renegotiate or I can't finish the building. Now, the unions, Ruggiero, his crew wouldn't care. Because they're still going to get paid. The pressure would then be on the city to redo whatever the hell the deal is. And there's nothing worse. So you have an empty Superman building. And then you would have another... you know what's worse than no economic development? Stalled economic development. When you have just like a building halfway up. There's something about this whole thing that just... When you have other developers... And Fred, I knew of someone... He passed away. You know who I'm referring to. Very big
Absolutely.
Developer recently. He told me he had $300 million, and he was set to build there. But when they told him, oh, no, you have to use every union we have, he walked away. And he said they would jack up his cost 25 to 30% and said you can't make money out of it. So how and he was a brilliant guy. How is it that Fain in New York sees that he could make money on something that someone else, who I had a lot of respect for, learned a lot from, said, there's no way you can do it and make money that way. There's something odd about the whole thing. Now, I agree with you. I don't like Elorza. I don't like his tactics. It reeks of a shakedown. But there's something about the whole thing that this guy was like, yes, 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 yes. And now all of a sudden it hits a brick wall. So, but good luck with the fight. Notice Raimondo wants nothing to do with this fight between him and Ruggiero.
And remember one thing. There was also another statement today. Well, you know, we got these big corporations now starting to move in here. They need a place to live and down in the city of Providence.
Where are these companies? Who are these corporations?
That's what I like to know. You know, well, let me tell you something. I don't know what those condos are going to be over there, but I'm going to tell you right now. You can grab a beautiful home down in East Greenwich for $600-700. But wait a minute now. They're reshuffling everything. They always got an excuse.
Yep. Well, not only that.
You know,
I mean,
there's always an excuse.
You're going to pay $5,500 a month for an apartment in Providence. Okay, so I'm actually going to rent that. $5,500 a month. Where am I going to get my dry cleaning? What if I need to go grocery shopping? Where am I going to do these? There's nothing around there. What, am I going to walk down Allen's Avenue? There's nothing designed like that. And Fred, here's the one last thing. As far as the Senate president, what would be his attitude on this development if the developer was saying, I'll build it, I'll spend the $300 million, but I'm not using all those unions? What do you think his position would be?
Then we don't want you.
We don't want you. It begins.
We don't need you.
It begins and ends there. But no, this is going to. Thank you for the call, Freddie. This is going to be a battle with Alorza and the Senate president. But folks, it's about the unions. It is, folks. This portion of the John DePietro Show is brought to you by K's 1013 Cass Avenue in Saucon. Whether it's lunch, dinner, or drink in the lounge, stop by and see them at K's. 766-1380 on the John DePietro Show. He is exactly right, and it is incredible the fact that basically the school committees are now all being run by the union people. This is the next phase that they're moving into. This is the next line that they are, in fact, moving into. Hey, I want to remind you, one of the most important gifts that you could give you and your family this Christmas, how about a water filter from Water Filter Company? Call them today at 401-294-2400. It's Steve, it's Alice. Folks, since 1986, Water Filter Company, do what I did. Have a nice water filter installed in your home. And then it takes out all the lead, all the toxins, all the arsenic, all the chemicals. Water Filter Company, clean, purified drinking water. Call Water Filter Company today, 401-294-2400. Now you see their building. They're right off of Route 4 in North Kingstown. We've had Steve on. He is so knowledgeable. Folks, do yourself a favor. Water Filter Company, 401-294-2400, 401-294-2400. And remember, bottled water is an unregulated industry. You actually don't know what you're getting with bottled water. Instead, call Water Filter Company today at 401-294-2400, Water Filter Company. Good afternoon to everybody on Facebook Live. There's Gina Parker. That's right. There's Captain Chris and a lot more. I'm telling you, that's what it comes down to. It's about the union control. And that's why I am telling you, though, there's something about this Fain deal that just this, it doesn't make sense. All these other developers say you can't do it that way. It's cost prohibitive. And this guy says, oh, no, I don't care. I'll pay whatever. I think he throws the brakes on this thing halfway through.
He's John DePietro. He's really in the know with his talk show. On your radio, he's John DePietro. Tune in your radio. Go get him, Johnny D.
Folks, listen, enjoy this Monday. Remember, follow me on both Facebook and Twitter at John DePietro Show. I'm back tomorrow right here at 11. Make sure also you visit the website, DePietro.com, DePetro.com, the official website of the Independent Man. Enjoy this Monday. We're back tomorrow at 11. John Dion's next on AM 1380, 99.9 FM, and it's WNRI.
Season's greetings.
WNRI and W236CW Woonsocket, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.